Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of A Real Point of View here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm joined by film critic Mr. Larry D. Dumkowski. Larry, say hi to the kind people out there.
Well, hello there, good people, and thank you for joining us tonight. We have got a great show.
Oh, we do. We're going to talk about chase scenes tonight. And we wanted to bring along with us a good friend and buddy. Say hello, Carlton. This is Carlton, everybody.
Hi, guys. How is everybody tonight?
Well, we're hoping everybody's doing it real well, we hope, anyway. And we thank him for visiting and hanging out with us tonight. So why don't we go ahead and get started. Our show tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is about chase scenes, the art of the chase. Real popular in movies, actually dating back even long before cars were even invented, or I should say, cars are being seen in chase scenes. But we want to start off tonight with one of the movies that was really paramount in what chase scenes are really about. And why don't you start us off, Larry, with the movie in question here tonight is French Connection. How is that important to chase scenes in film?
Well, we needed to start somewhere, and I think the best thing we can do is start somewhere where we can easily highlight what creates a chase scene and what creates a chase movie. You know, one important element of the chase scene, it's very kinetic. Kinetic and with intent. There has to be an intent for this movement. It cannot be just random stuff going on. And there has to be an object, something that you're moving toward, something that you need to grab, to grasp, to stop, to catch. And the French Connection, when it came out, it just kind of rewrote what a chase scene is. It just totally raised the bar to a whole new level of chase scenes. Carlton and I have talked about this movie quite a bit recently, and Carlton came up with some interesting points about this film. And Carlton, why don't you go ahead and tell a little bit about that?
Well, of course, The French Connection is kind of part of a trilogy of three films, but there's a refinement here where you see Popeye Doyle, the main police officer in this, who is he's the guy who's chasing from beginning to end. He's looking for, you know, whether the chase is sitting and watching somebody or is sitting and waiting for something to happen, or the foot pursuit, or this just mad escalating car dash, car chase that goes through and in and around these railroad tracks drives this film. And there are breaks in it, of course, but you just see from beginning to end this film that is about chasing. And the chase is on even before the movie starts, because he is looking for this Popeye Doyle. Is looking for the Gene Hackman character, is looking for this connection. And this connection, the French Connection, the drug lords are the ones that he is after, and he knows it's there. And he gets close, and then he's not close. He gets a little closer, and he finds these clues. But each one of these clues drives the action, both story and physical action, forward.
So it's not just a physical chase. It's a mental chase. And it's chasing down of the people who are actually dealing with the drugs, where, no matter where it's coming from.
Right, and the script also, the dialogue also has these elements of this pursuit, this chase, this hunt, if you will, which and those three words, pursuit, chase, and hunt, will perhaps come into this discussion further later about their role in this thing that we call the chase scenes or chase films.
I thought this was a really good film, and obviously enough to make a trilogy. And it seems to me back then, in the 70s when this movie came out in 71, seemed like sequels to these films were a little bit more had a little bit more punch. And this was such a good story, and that I thought even the remake was pretty decent. What are you about to say about this film, Larry?
Well, about The French Connection? Oh, it's one of the finest films made. And interestingly enough, coming out in 71, it was one of the first of the great films that came out of the 1970s. And this is important. You know, this is real important because in the 1970s, it kind of breaks the mold as to what is that Academy Award-winning film. And that the prior to that and after that, you, for the most part, you get back into the same archetype of what is a great, what is an Academy Award-winning film. But
well,
the 1970s changes all that.
Yeah, the 70s also is the final break from the old studio system, even though we see some studios like Paramount who are rising and producing films. You don't have the contract players. You don't have these formulaic films that are traditional. And so, you know, that's why the 70s may be the last great era so far in filmmaking, and that we get things like The French Connection that start to drive this new approach to filmmaking. One thing I wanted to say real quick about The French Connection, it's part of this trio. The trio is not French Connection films. The trio and The Connection is Bullet, French Connection, and then another film called The Seven Ups. And these are produced in a lot of ways. They're different directors, but they're three different directors, but they have the same producer and a lot of the writers and crew that go along, and they're all these stories about the mob, one Chicago to San Francisco, and of course then The French Connection, of course, is in New York City, and The Seven Ups is also in New York City. But there's a progression of these in terms of the development in these about these crime stories, these suspense action films that all add something very, very important to the visual language of the chase.
Yeah, that's important because what's interesting is all three of these films develop the concept of the chase to the point where in Bullet it's almost a series of chases to finally you get to the Seven Ups where the whole thing is a chase. It is a chase movie, period. And you can even argue that the movie we're discussing now, The French Connection, it's a chase movie from the very beginning of the movie. It part of what the movie is about is the chase.
Well, let's move along to our next movie. We've got quite a few movies to cover tonight. And the next one we want to cover, and we're going to try to do this in relative chronological order. We're going to start in the late 1930s. This movie came out in 1939, and that's Stagecoach. This movie stars John Wayne, Claire Trevor, Annie Devine. A really good movie. This is a John Ford movie. John Ford was a really big director back in the golden age of Hollywood. And so this is a Stagecoach movie. So what is the chase in this film, and why is this film so important to our subject matter?
Well, this film is almost the pinnacle of what a Western chase scene had. In this film, the big chase scenes is with these Indians and then this stagecoach. And the stagecoach gets from one safe haven to another, and they sit, they talk, and then they go on. And every time they go on, they know they're going to be chased. And
There's one specific scene that is a fantastic scene in this, and this is when one of the Apache Indians jumps off his horse onto the horses of the stagecoach, and then eventually falls off down underneath the stagecoach and goes on. What was interesting was that was all real. That really happened. And the guy was paid to do that. The guy was paid to slip through the horses and then go underneath the stagecoach. In an incredible series of action events, this film really set the stage for what a chasing could be, and then set the stage for everything that was going to come after it, even though it wasn't necessarily going to happen in Westerns. It was probably the great, at that point, by 1939, it was probably one of the best chase scenes that has been on film.
And do you concur, Tom?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, of course, John Ford was a master of using the camera, and of course, the Ford contributed so much of the technique of the camera and the kineticism that we would see even today, even with special effects and CGI, and how the camera moves and the perspective that we see and where the camera is placed. And this type of, in many cases, with Ford, you see front to back as well as across the frame type of, you see things coming into or going out of the frame from a point of view as opposed to being an observer from the side. And this is one of the things that Ford really brought to the chase, and he brought to, you know, filmmaking. And Stagecoach is this classic piece that you can say there were films before Stagecoach and there were films after Stagecoach. And of course, this is something with many of these films that we're going to discuss or have already talked about this evening, is that they, each one of these is a threshold for a particular reason, either in the element that makes up the chase, the techniques that are introduced, the type of chase that's occurring, which we're going to talk about in the next film, that, you know, redefine this as a part of where the chase occurs, whether it's the physical chase, it's in the storyline, which in Stagecoach, they're learning something about each other at each one of these Stagecoach stops. And that builds the importance of the chase to the end of the film.
And what's interesting right along with that, and by doing that, and something that you alluded to a moment ago, Carlton, is that it takes the film a goer out of the film theater and puts it in the stagecoach with those characters.
Right. This is the point of view that Ford brings.
Yeah, and so we become an integral part of that chase, and without that, the film doesn't work. But because of that, the film works in a way no film had worked prior to that.
I would agree. Yes.
So let's go to the next one, and Carlton, why don't you go ahead and take this one?
Well, Moby Dick is not one that a lot of people would at first think about as a chase film, but this is one that uses an entirely different physical mechanism, whaling, to give us this chase from the beginning that we're not really sure what we're getting into, even if we know the story of Moby Dick, we've read the book. But what we see is this boiled down presence that suddenly begins to appear as Ahab first appears in his first scene with the crew. And his first communication with the crew, other than looking down from the topmost deck, is that he nails the coin to this main mast, and he says, "To the first man who spots the white whale." And the chase is on. And from that point on, it's a chase of madness. It is a chase of, you know, starts and stops. And herein we see this, where we see this lassitude in the dialogue, in the portrayal of the actors, until somebody sees the whale again, and then action kinetic on the deck erupts, and everybody has a role to play to fulfill this their portion of the chase. What Ahab is driving, it's not about whaling anymore. Now it's about vengeance. So the chase is used in this film to help Ahab go after this quest, this just absolute obsession. And we see this through a variety of mechanisms, where we see the ship being torn apart later. We see the the people who are very active in what they have to do, rowing boats, or the whale escaping, you know, off camera, or that there's going to be losses in, that are going to be experienced for the crew, and how they're learning more about one another, and that they're almost random players in this, but this case is predicated before they signed on.
It's true, Carlton. I think it's one of the big parts of the film is that the crew has no idea, you know, that what Ahab, his intent is. And they get caught up in this chase. And it's either chase with and for the captain and for what he wants or die. They have no other choice. And so they're caught into this as a matter of survival. Whereas Ahab's doing it, he's chasing it as a matter of vengeance. The rest of the crew is doing it as a matter of survival. And here, and in this difference provides a marvelous tension that works throughout the entire film.
And
we also have to look at the look at the chase in the realms of the force of will. We have Captain Ahab's will of trying to, as Carlton so eloquently put it, his quest for vengeance. And then we have Moby Dick turning the tide. Moby Dick is almost like he understands and knows who this is, and he has the will to survive this situation to get the person that, in all reality, escaped him, seemingly.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that Moby Dick becomes one of these transitional points in film storytelling, because we have gotten to the point where we can now say in this conversation that the chaser and the chasee are linked together. They have something that, in terms of what makes a chase scene or a chase film, they are related. They know they're being chased. They know they're chasing. This isn't a hunt or a pursuit. We know in the beginning of a chase, whether it's the film or a chase scene, that everybody knows what's going on. It's important to the chase.
And another interesting part about this is that who is chasing changes in this film.
Yes.
And this also provides a great deal of tension for the moviegoer in this, is that turnaround. And now, Moby Dick, this force of nature, is chasing Ahab. And now, let's turn around again. Now Ahab is chasing Moby Dick. And it keeps on switching. It's brilliant. And in its filmmaking, it's brilliant. I have to give a lot of credit to John Huston. Again, a fantastic director that came out of that same school of filmmaking that John Ford came out of.
Right. And also,
he was a protege. Huston was a protege of Ford, too.
Yeah.
You can see that even in the Westerns, where the chase is very paramount. The cavalry chases, the Indian chases of settlers. I mean, it's that constant motion. And that kind of filmmaking back then made it a lot more interesting for the viewer to watch. And so I really appreciated all that and loved those movies. Well, why don't we go into the next film? In this case, we have another film. This movie came out back in the 1990s, 1991, and this is Point Break. And this is a film with Keanu Reeves and with Patrick Swayze. Now, this film is about an undercover FBI agent trying to infiltrate a gang of bank robbers, so who, quote-unquote, end up being surfers. So how is the chase manifested in this particular film, guys?
Well, if I may, this is one I selected, and this is another one of these non-traditional, non-car chase kind of, or vehicle chase type things. Keanu Reeves' character is brought in as Johnny Utah by Gary Busey, the older FBI agent, to continue the chase. He needs a tool for the chase. Keanu Reeves' character, Johnny Utah, is that tool. We know from the beginning of the film, or Busey gives us this from the beginning of the film, that he knows everything there is to know about these people. He knows what they're going to do, when they're going to do it, how they're going to do it, and he's 99% convinced that they are surfers. It's just he's an old guy, and he can't infiltrate them. He's gone as far as he can go with his investigation without a break. And the break that he needs is this young guy who has some prominence that gives him a mechanism for, as you say, to infiltrate, to go undercover. And the chase begins almost from the opening credits with watching how this gets incorporated, and it starts slowly and it builds. There's this chase after a woman to get her to allow him to become friends with or become part of the beach scene, to learn how to surf. And then, like a couple of these other films we've talked about, not only Moby Dick, but even we saw this in Bullet with the chaser and the chasee flipping roles, we see that suddenly the Patrick Swayze character sees something in the Keanu Reeves character that he wants to pursue. Now, whether this is to bring him into the inner circle of robbing banks, he's not sure what he's seeing. He sees somebody that's a protege. Initially, that's not important. But we see that this incorporation of these two characters being brought closer and closer and closer together as the story progresses to the reality of, okay, he's a cop, he's a bad guy. He's a bank robber, he's an FBI agent. He's an undercover, he's somebody who's, you know, just trying to make money to surf some more. And this bringing them together along with these kinetic scenes of escaping bank robberies or, you know, running through neighborhoods or, you know, trying to bust a house where people are staying, those are the physical elements of the chase. But then as the film progresses, which we can get to in a moment or two here, we see that this chase continues way beyond the normal, just physical concept. It's intrinsic to the storyline. Wouldn't you say so, Larry?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's important to remember here that this movie, Point Break, was directed by Frankenheimer. This is important. Why? Because Frankenheimer directed the sequel to the French Connection 2, and he also directed Grand Prix, which is another. It's a race movie. Make no mistake, it's a race movie. But it's also that's a subgenre of a chase movie. And Frankenheimer is very, very good at getting these action sequences in order and in a way that either is the plot or forwards the plot. And in the case of Point Break, it is the plot. The chase is the story.
And we see the chase at all levels. We see it on the water. We see it in automobiles. We see it on foot. We even see it in parachuting out of an airplane as a chase to get a parachute. I mean, everything in this becomes an element of this, not just a pursuit, but it's literally everybody knows what they're after, and it's the mechanical, kinetic, vibrant, current action that is having to be pursued to get to the next piece of this story. And each
yeah.
one of these pieces has an element to it that is just one more chase sequence.
Look at the Keanu Reeves character, Johnny Utah. Everything he does, he converts it to a chase. Whether it's confronting his boss, whether it's looking at that girl and then deciding she's the one that'll help him get into the surfer crowd. You know, he says, "Okay, that's my next pursuit. That's my next pursuit. That's my next pursuit." He's always chasing throughout the entire film.
Right. Well,
and then,
speaking of Frankenheimer, we're gonna, if we want to get this next movie in, this last movie or primary movie anyway, let's go on to Ronin, made in 1998, starring Robert De Niro and Jean Reno.
It's Don Reno is the easiest way to say it.
Yeah.
We've got some former agents who have become mercenaries in this particular film, and this is a John Frankenheimer movie as well.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about the situation.
Well,
don't worry about it. I understand.
Yeah, Ronin is such a fantastic chase film. From the very beginning, we see Robert De Niro staking something out, and his intent is that of the chase. He knows from the very beginning that he is in a chase, but he doesn't know who, what, when, where, or how yet. But he's already setting up the audience by giving us the visual the visual language necessary to watch this film. In that first sequence in the film, from him getting to the cafe to everything getting set up to the whole thing going down, in that first 20 minutes of the film, they give us the language and how this film is being told. And make no mistake, it's all about chase.
And this is one too where we see this very techniqued approach, where we see the walking pace, and we're given a visual language that it's like the early part of this chase, it's slow, it's deliberate, it's on foot. We're walking into the scene. We're not sure what we're walking into, but we're willingly doing this. And then it starts to pick up. Even as shortly thereafter, part of the chase, the impetus, the drive is carried on solely through dialogue between men sitting and talking, and you hear the pace of what their conversation picking up. You hear the questioning that De Niro is making of the Sean Bean character, becoming very methodical, very intent, and he picks up the pace, and that is where the chase continues throughout that segment before we get physical action. We have action on different levels.
And not only different levels, but this movie, and also as in Point Break, we're seeing multiple chases happening at the same time. Even though these are chase movies, they're not necessarily linear. And that's important because at one point another chase overtakes the importance of a current chase. And every once in a while they all come together. And that's when we see the grand chases. It's really quite amazing.
Only a few minutes. So any other chase movies you want to talk about? Me personally, movies.
I can just mention and say that many James Bond movies, as with so many elements, they have great chases in them. And a couple of them are chases from beginning to end. There are any one of a number of things that one can point at these were ones to illustrate some points that made them a chase film as opposed to just action movies with great chase sequences.
And I'd also like to mention some movies, the chase movies, are really crash movies. They're crash and burn movies. You know, so for instance, you have the Blues Brothers movie. It's about crashing. It's not necessarily about a chase.
And then you have the series of movies with the Fast and the Furious. There are chase scenes before the actual physical chase. Is the chase between the pursuers, law enforcement pursuing the main characters in that film, and another film which is not related called Faster with The Rock, where Billy Bob Thornton is chasing this guy, not because he's the law guy chasing the criminal, but he's chasing the criminal because he doesn't want anyone to know that he too is a criminal.
Faster is a great example. The Fast and Furious, very briefly, that series are action, crash, a lot of things. I kind of don't call them chase movies because there are a lot of story elements that are not about chasing in them that make them a crime or a suspense or a police drama. Great movies. I love them. And great chase scenes. But I'm not sure I'd call them chase movies.
And one really quick thing, because of what happened today, I want to mention really quick, there was a 1973 made-for-TV movie called Baffled, and it starred Leonard Nimoy as a race car driver, and that, yes, is his entry into the world of chase scenes, of chase movies.
Yeah, rest in peace, Leonard. We miss you, my man.
Yep.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's our time for today. I wish we had more time to talk, and maybe in the future we will. But thanks for listening to A Real Point of View. Check us out here on Blog Talk Radio. Check our archives. Check us out on Twitter at A Real Movie Guy. And we just want to wish you a wonderful rest of your day, and thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks to Carlton. Thanks to Larry. You guys have a wonderful night. We're out of here.
Peace.
Peace.